This is Franz again. I'm doing this podcast again while I'm walking down to my club to work out and then on to my office. It's a pleasant morning in Salt Lake City. It's October 4th, 2012. It's a sunny day. You can really tell the seasons are about to change. We're getting, it's a brisk morning. The temperatures were in the 40 degrees in the Fahrenheit range this morning. It's a sunny day, just a beautiful, crisp, fall, sunny day. The kind of day you want to go for a walk in. In fact, as I'm thinking about this is the sort of day I don't want to spend in the office. We have, we've had actually quite a few of these days in Utah this year, and this is one of them. But I know in about a month and a half, it's going to be dark and dreary and cold, and it's nice to take advantage of these days when you have them. Well, again, this podcast is going to be put on both the Travel Trade Exchange website as well as the MedSailor.com website, because the story is a continuation of my travel story, summer of 2012, taking the boat from Croatia through Montenegro, Albania, and Greece, and then I ended up in Turkey at the end of the summer. So when the last podcast we covered, when Dave and Rosemary joined me in Galaxidi, we went through the Corinth Canal and then on to the island of Paros, where they got off. And we talked about Dave's injury. In the podcast before that, we talked about moving the boat from Croatia, the mechanical problems I had in Montenegro with both my freshwater and my saltwater pumps, and the problems dealing with that issue. So today, I'm going to see how far I get, but I want to cover the area from Paros, where Dave and Rosemary got off, and then on to, you can see as far as I get today. Anyway, Dave and Rosemary got off in Paros. I had about a day before my friend Bud arrived. Bud is a friend of mine, lives in California. He's a sailor. And I looked at this as really my time off, because I didn't have to entertain anybody. He knows what he's doing. I could let him sail the boat and I can relax. And usually when I have guests come on board, I'm the only sailor. I like to actually invite people to go sailing with me that have never been sailing before, because it gives them a memory that really lasts a lifetime. And I've had some people that really enjoyed it and then continued on learning how to sail on their own. But most people just have a great memory and a great time. And that's, I really enjoy doing that. I enjoy giving people that experience. But this is a week where my friend Bud joined me. Bud lives in California, Newport Beach, California. And I've sailed with him many times on various boats. He owns a big power boat, but he grew up sailing. And I've done the Newport Ensenada race with him several times. I sail with some of his buddies in Southern California when I'm down there. So Bud was going to join me, or did join me, in Paros. But I had a day between when Rosemary and Dave got off and when Bud arrived. And what I did with that time was, first of all, I had to do the laundry. And I don't know what the problem is in the Mediterranean countries in general, but getting laundry done has always been a big challenge of mine. In America, we have laundromats, coin-operated laundromats, and they seem to be located pretty much everywhere. It's a good business to be in. It's a cash business to be in. It's a good service to offer. And students that go to school or people that live in apartments that don't have room for their own laundries go and use these facilities, spend an afternoon or a morning doing their laundry and taking their laundry home. Well, why are there no laundries, coin-operated laundries in Europe? I'll tell you a funny story. I was sailing in Croatia and I was by myself. And I'd gotten up to the northern part of Croatia, and I don't have my charts with me right now, otherwise I'd tell you the name of the town. But anyway, I was working my way north. I wanted to get as far north in Croatia, and I was basically about, maybe 10, 15 miles away from the northern border of Croatia. It's where a big river runs up it. And at this river was this one of the largest nudist colonies in Europe. I think it had the ability to house 10,000 bare naked people. Well, I hadn't planned on going there, but I was by myself, and the weather forecast was not good. In fact, the night before, the day before, there were two waterspouts that passed just north of me. And waterspouts are basically tornadoes on the water. And the weather forecast was for bad weather. And I decided, well, this nudist colony had a really nice, well-protected marina. So I said, well, let's go over there and tie up. So I went over there and tied up. And it was actually relatively cold. It was in late September, and the weather was fairly cold. And it said, there was a sign saying no clothes if you leave the marina. You can't go and be a voyeur. You've got to be one of the nudists. So fortunately for me, it was fairly cold and everybody was wearing clothes anyway. I don't know if that's fortunate. I don't mind looking at a good-looking naked woman. I'm a guy. I don't have a problem with that. Not sure they want to look at this old body of mine, though. Anyway, what? It was the only place I had found. As I wandered around, so they had camp parks, parks for campers and places for people to camp out, and then they had rooms that they would rent. And it was kind of interesting. A lot of people had rented the space where they kept I guess they call them caravans in Europe, but basically their recreational vehicles or their trailers, and had left them there for years and years and years, and had been built up around there. But it was the only place I found in Europe that had a laundromat. And I sent my wife an email, and I didn't even really think about the humor in it at the time. And I said, "Hey, guess what? They have a laundromat here." And my wife wrote back, says, "Now that's pretty damn funny. The only laundromat you find in Europe is at a nudist colony. Doesn't seem to compute, does it?" Yeah. Anyway, so like I say, there was one time in Greece when I left my friends in the island of Ithaca. No, actually, it was in Kefalonia. And this is probably 10, 15 years ago. I let my crew out, and it was a fairly large town with a lot of rental properties and so forth. And I thought, well, some of these condominiums or hotels are going to have laundry facilities. So I had a rental car at the time, so I started knocking on doors, and nobody had them. I don't know how they did their laundry, but there was no way for a sailor to easily do his laundry. I found this one old Greek lady at this one apartment complex, and I said, "Hey," she didn't speak any English, and of course, I don't speak any Greek. And I sort of walked up to her, and she was cleaning up one of the apartments. She was the owner of it. And I said, I sort of looked at, I grabbed my clothes and rubbed them together, and she looked at me, and I said, "Do you know, I sort of miss anywhere around here?" And she looked, "Ah." So she had me follow her up. She grabbed some keys, had me follow her up to a room, and took me into a room and showed me a shower and said, "Oh, here you go." And obviously we had a miscommunication. I said, "Oh, no." And so I did it again. I sort of pantomimed what I needed to do. And then the light came on. She said, "Oh, okay, follow me." So she took me downstairs, back to the back of the apartment complex, found a water faucet, threw a pan up there and said, "Okay, there you go." I said, "Well, I've done that all summer long, and I wanted to really get my clothes clean, so I wanted to have a machine laundry for my clothes." So that day, basically, I asked around this town. No such luck. I ended up driving all the way across the island to find There was one laundromat in the main town on Kefalonia that was in existence, so I spent the afternoon doing the laundry there. But I don't understand it. What's the problem with Europe? Why is it so hard for a traveler to do laundry? I mean, you can pay to have your laundry done at facilities, but that's gets to be quite expensive. Well, that's what I ended up doing in Naousa. Ended up taking my clothes to a paid laundry facility, and in my opinion, they're always way overpriced for the service they offer. But I didn't really have much choice, and so I had the laundry done there. Again, I'm getting out of breath. Sorry about that, but I'm walking and talking. So I rent a motor scooter, and after I drop off my laundry, I pick up a few groceries at a grocery store and right around the island. And I'm pretty familiar with this island, so I just go out to one of my favorite beaches and hang out there for a while. Not really a beach person. I spend the summer on the boat. If I want to go swimming, I jump in the water, and then I don't have to deal with the sand and the dirt. I thought it'd be a good change. Took a book, took my iPod, and just spent a morning and part of an afternoon at a beach, and then I went back to the boat. Friend Bud arrived the next day. So we wandered around the town that night, and I'm not a particular fan of most of the music I hear. Is electro music, electronic music, which I don't think requires much skill to produce and really just has a throbbing, monotonous beat that's over amplified. But the kids like it, and that seemed to be what was predominant in the bars in the town there. So next morning we leave, and it's dead calm. So this is the calm after the Maltimi. And we end up spending the day just leisurely motoring down the passage between Naxos Island and Paros, down around the southern point of Naxos, through a bunch of little islands. Then I thought we might stop at one of these little islands on the way, but Bud said, "Hey, let's just head over to Amargoros." Now, Bud hadn't been there. This was new to him, but I'd been to Amargoros before and had pleasant memories of it. And so we head over to Amargoros. We tie up there in the evening, and it's pretty packed. It's pretty busy. There's a lot of little tiny passenger boats coming in and out and in and out, loading up, and the port police is there directing traffic. And the first time I dropped my anchor and backed in, my anchor didn't hold. So I had to go back out and drop my anchor and come back in. And the second time it seemed to hold, but I always like to swim and look at the anchor after I drop it to make sure I've got a good set on the anchor. I can dive pretty deeply just with just free dive pretty deeply. I'm comfortable in the water and in the Mediterranean where the water is so clear and so comfortable and so nice. Why not? So I swam out there, and as I was swimming out there's all these boats coming in, and the port police sees me out there, and I don't know if he was worried about my safety. He said, "Get back here, get back here." And I said, "Hey, I need to go check my anchor." And he said, "Well, wait a minute." And he was just concerned for my safety because of all the traffic of all these small boats coming in and out of the dock. I was able to check my anchor, and it set well the second time. I probably should have used my double anchor technique when it didn't grab the first time, but I wasn't expecting really any bad weather in the next day or so. So we drop anchor. The people on the boat next to us were not there, and they ended up coming back. We ended up sharing drinks together and having a good conversation. I think they were from one of the Scandinavian countries. I notice all the Scandinavians speak English. You know, see a Scandinavian flag, they all speak English as well as I do, possibly better. So we had a good conversation, and turns out the reason we were having so much traffic in Amargoros that night was because they were having a festival. And it was some religious festival, and the people were getting on these little boats and going out to some church and having some sort of a ceremony out at the church. But when they were all done, they were all coming back to the town. for a party, basically, for a festival. So they had that night, they had and it was a festival to the local liquor. Now, I like a party like that. It was some local liqueur that was made at that island. And so there was free liqueur, and they had candy out there, and there was dancing. And I put some videos up on my website of the traditional folk dancing that was going on that night. And we had a wonderful time, just a great time. The next day, I wanted to rent a car and drive around the island. So Bud and I did. We rented a car. We drove over to the monastery that's on the south side of the island. It's a spectacular monastery. It's set right in a cliff, and you have to walk a little ways to get up there. It's up some switchbacks. But once you get up there, the monks give you a little refreshment and some water and a little liqueur refreshment, and thank you for coming. They don't allow photographs inside the monastery. In fact, I'd taken a photograph, and I was told to delete the photograph. And then we just spent the rest of the day driving around the island. We went up to the northern end of the island. I'd sailed by this northern port in the past, but I'd never stopped into it. And I always like to scope out anchorages and possible stopping points if I have the opportunity by land. So we did that. And the next day, the wind had come up a lot during the day we were driving around. Fortunately, my anchor held because it was coming out of the direction my nose was pointed into, which was sort of, I guess, northeast north. It swirls around in the harbor, so you never really know where the wind's coming from. But my anchor held. I always get nervous leaving my boat and going and driving, because there was one time in Rhodes, when we pulled into Rhodes, my family and I were there, who'd sailed over from Turkey, and as we pulled in, there was a catamaran that had turned turtle, and the people had done just what I'm talking about. They'd left their boat. The wind came up. It bashed the boat against the concrete, the quay, and it sunk it. And nobody seemed to care. Nobody did anything to protect the boat. So you can't assume somebody else will watch out for your boat. I have had that happen in the past, where I've been gone from the boat, and the wind came up, and fortunately for me, this was in Mykonos a few years ago. The boat next to me saw that I wasn't dug in well enough, so he went and sprang my boat off of his boat, and prevented damage from occurring to my boat. So I've had these random acts of kindness from other sailors, but this catamaran wasn't lucky enough to have that happen to him. Anyway, we got back to the boat. The boat was fine in Amagoros, and the next day. So the next day we left. Well, the winds were very strong, and my intention had been to go. I'm trying to think of the island. It's always good to be sitting in front of Google Earth or one of my charts when I'm telling these stories, so I can give you these islands. But there's an island directly east of Amagoros, tiny little island with a tiny little harbor in it. And there's a family there that will serve supper, will serve dinner every night. And they serve dinner just basically to the boats that are anchored there. And usually there's about 7 or 8 boats that can fit into this little harbor, maybe 10 at the most. And I've spent time there in the past, and that's where I wanted to go, because I had good memories of visiting this little island. You might hear in the background, I'm coming down to City Creek again. And the water's running down through the little creek. This is a creek that goes through the new shopping center in Salt Lake, called City Creek Center. A brand new, well-designed, very pleasant little shopping area in Salt Lake. It's not little, it's actually pretty big. But this is just part of that creek. So, back to the story. To go the direction I wanted to go was going to be right into the winds, and the waves were probably 4 or 5 feet, and it was very choppy and very windy. And I said, that's not going to work. I don't want to spend all day long bouncing against that. First of all, our speed would be reduced to around 2 knots. And secondly, it's just too uncomfortable. There's no point in doing it. So we turned around, headed back into the harbor to where the water was flat and the wind was strong, but we were protected from the waves. And we talked about it. We said, well, what are we going to do? We could have gone back and spent another night in Amagoros, but neither Bud nor I wanted to do that. We liked the town, but we liked the island, but it was time to move on. Yeah, we're getting a lot of background noise. Sorry about that. People out blowing leaves with leaf blowers and lawnmowers going by. So he said, well, what are we going to do? So, you know, the other choice I decided was to turn around, run with the wind, and head down to Ostapalaya. And that's what we did. We turned left in Amagoros, went around the western tip of Amagoros, and headed south to the island of Ostapalaya. And this is an island I hadn't visited, so this was new for me last summer. We turn around and we get into Ostapalaya. As we get around the south side of the island, we're protected. We're protected from the wind, relatively speaking. And I had gone forward to get the dinghy ready. And suddenly a big gust came up and lifted the dinghy right off the boat and threw it into the water. Fortunately, it was flat water and the dinghy started drifting away and we were able to capture it. But that just tells you the sort of strength the wind was having that day. Very strong winds. We were running downwind with basically just the staysail up. And of course the boat was being steered by the vane gear. And Bud and I would take turns on watch. I'd go down and read a book down below or take a nap down below, and he'd be on watch and vice versa. It's nice having a trusted companion for a change. I'm going to get by this lawnmower here. All right, so at Ostapalaya, we went to the main town on the south end of the island of Ostapalaya and pulled in. And my charts were obviously obsolete because it showed that there was basically an anchorage area in here. And since the pilot I had, which was really a relatively new pilot, the town had put in a breakwater on the south side and put in laid moorings. Actually, I don't know if they were laid moorings or not, but anyway, they had a quay that you had to back into. Well, the only problem was the quay was full, and they had about half of the quay blocked off so they couldn't use it. So there really was no room at the quay, and the wind was coming from where you would drop your anchor into the quay. It was coming from the north, and your boat was pointed to the north. So all these boats at the quay, I'm pretty sure they dropped their anchor. They were not laid moorings. They had to drop their anchor and back in. So they just had to hope that the wind wasn't strong enough to kick their sterns back onto the concrete, back to the mole. But I thought, well, I looked around, and according to the chart, I could drop my anchor. And so I went out there and just dropped my anchor, and I thought, well, I'll just take the dinghy to shore. I did a double anchor. I put my little fortress anchor in front of my 35-pound CQR and dropped it. And, you know, we stopped. We were having lunch. We were having drinks. We thought, okay, we're here. It was a bouncy day, and we were just relaxing, having a drink. And suddenly this guy on the shore yells at me, says, you can't anchor there. You can't anchor there. You got to move. Well, there's plenty of room for anybody to maneuver around me, and we were away from the swimming area. But he seemed to think he had the right to tell me what to do, and he may have been a port police. I don't know, but we thought, well, all right, what are we going to do? You know, if they just had the quay open, I would have backed in there, but they didn't. So we thought about it, and it was very, very windy. And if you manage a boat like mine, it's very difficult to maneuver a boat like mine at slow speeds and tight areas. It's not a racing boat. Most of the racing boats have fin keels and will turn on a dime. My boat doesn't. It's a full keel, and it takes a long time to turn the boat around. So you have to plan way in advance what you plan on doing. Well, we thought about it, and we said, okay, They put in a brand new big breakwater with big, big boulders. And we said, well, let's go out there. There are other boats tied to the ferry dock, big yachts, you know, 100-foot yachts that were tied to the ferry dock. And the trouble with that was they were abroad to the wind. And I knew there was going to be no way that I could back into that, that back in sideways without having a lot of trouble. So the last thing I wanted to do was back in with a wind coming across my beam. It would be just a fiasco. So I decided not to even try that. So we said, okay, let's go out. We'll go just on the other side of the breakwater, drop our anchor, and back into the rocks and take a line to the rocks. And that's exactly what we did. And we were very, very comfortable there. We were actually being pushed off the rocks by the wind. We didn't need to worry about dragging our anchor because our anchor was downwind. And that's the way it was all night long. In fact, I slept a lot better there than I would have if I'd been at the koi, at the mole on the other side. All those boats on the other side were probably up all night worrying about dragging their anchor, and I was just comfortable, just like in Seraphos. So, Bud's a sailor. He likes adventure. He likes fun. I was sort of inclined just to stay there the next day because the wind was just as strong the next day. Again, like I say, the Meltemis were really strong this year. But Bud wanted to go, so we put up three reefs in the main and the staysail up and went on a broad reach along the south side of Amargoros. Even though we were fairly close to shore, it was still pretty darn choppy. So you can see even though we had a fairly short fetch, the waves were building up rather quickly. And we turned, as soon as we got to the exposed side of the island, to the east side of the island, we ran into big waves. Big waves, and it was very uncomfortable. I thought, well, forget it, Bud. Let's turn around and go back. So we turned around, headed back, and as we headed back, I started having second thoughts about my decision. Because there was a very nice protected anchorage on the north, in fact, it's totally surrounded by land, on the northeast corner of Astapalaya. And the chart said it used to be a pirate's haven, and you could see it could be because it's very protected, good holding all the way through there. Of course, I hadn't been there, but this is what I was getting from the charts and the pilot. And I sort of wanted to go there, and Bud wanted to go there. So I said, well, let's think about this one more time. So we did. We turned around. We tightened up, headed back out, and just as soon as we got out to the open water, we turned on the engine and just basically bucked against the wind and the waves for about 2-3 hours till we were able to turn the corner and come around the northeast corner of the island, and then we were headed west, and it's around this little tip of the island you come down, and we went to this anchorage. So we pulled into this anchorage. Of course, the water is flat, still some very strong winds, but it's got good sand, mud bottom holding, and but there's all these other boats there. About 17, 18 other boats are anchored there, and I expected to see no boats anchored there. And they were all flying Turkish flags. They all had numbers on them, and they were flying flags of a yacht regatta. And we pull in there, and it turns out that was the remnants of the 2012 Aegean Yacht Rally. And I'm running out of time again right now today, so I'm going to stop the podcast here because we had some good experiences in that little anchorage I'll tell you about in the next podcast. So again, I appreciate you listening. If you have any suggestions, please go to the website, leave me some comments, www.medsailor.com or www.traveltradeexchange.com. Thanks for listening.